I'd like to call the meeting to order, March 6th, Environment and Natural Resource Committee. First thing on the agenda, the minutes for our last meeting, if people have had a chance, for March 1st, 2007, with Representative Cornish.
I'll move the minutes from March 1st.
Thank you. Representative Cornish moves the minutes for March 1st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes have been adopted. We are going to continue today with Representative Maria Rood's bill, House File 375, and we are not going to be taking testimony. It's not going to be an open mic today, but we will take answers for questions that members have from people in the audience as questions are being asked pertaining to amendments or pertaining to the bill. I guess people can be ready for any potential questions that may be asked here today. But Representative Rood, I will... Yes, Representative Cornish.
Would it be okay if I made an announcement before we start about my handout?
Go ahead.
Just wanted to share this with my colleagues here to shine light on the subject, and I know you're open-minded, and there's going to be a climate science symposium called What Science Really Says About Global Warming, Thursday, March 8th, over at the History Center. You're welcome to attend. Thank you.
Okay. And we will continue with the bill, and I know Representative Rood, you have a delete all amendment as well, and I will first move the bill for you. I will move House File 375, and I will also move your delete all amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Which is Amendment H0375DE1. And this is just an amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. There is also one other amendment Representative Rood is offering as well, the H0375A3 amendment. So I will also move that amendment, to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Rood, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And just briefly to speak to those amendments, it does move the section out. It eliminates the sections that had to do with the fiscal note. There is no fiscal note for this bill at this point. And it also just clarifies the language that the state for this group will be studying the cap and trade within the state and beyond our borders as well. Just wanted to make that clear. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for being here. I want to thank you.
Excuse me, Representative Rood, some have difficulty hearing, so if you could speak into the mic.
Closer to it. Thank you for pointing that. We have heard a lot of great, compelling testimony. We have learned about the environmental impact of global warming. We have learned about the economics of global warming. And now we, as policymakers, must write the public policy for the state of Minnesota as it relates to global warming. We have the opportunity to put Minnesota in a position of strength, both economically and strategically. House File 375 does not preclude that Big Stone or Mascava can be built. Rather, it asks that we work harder and smarter and recognize the reality of a future economy using carbon emissions. We do not have the luxury of time to pass legislation that may sound good, but is of little substance. Thank you, and I ask for your support. I'm going to keep my comments brief because I know there are a number of amendments. And I do have people here today to help me because there are some technical things that I might be needing assistance with.
Mr. Chair, just a point of order.
McNamara.
Excuse me for interrupting, but I believe, Mr. Chair, when we adopted an amendment, you only referred to it as the H0375. Was there an A number, and in my bad hearing, did I miss it? I'm wondering if we... what amendment to put the bill in the shape the author wanted it, the second amendment. What was that amendment?
That was the H0375A3 amendment, and I believe I said that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, and we do have, as Representative Rood said, we have amendments to the bill. We have the H0375A6 amendment, and Representative Hackbarth, this is your amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move this amendment, the A6 amendment.
Representative Hackbarth moves the A6 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Convoluted as this might look, I think what I asked Mr. Eloff to do was to reduce this bill to a study. And what I wanted to do was tell the folks, all the stakeholders, to get together and work this out, much like we did with the mercury emissions bill last year, mercury emissions reduction bill last year, and renewable energy bill standards that we did this year. And this bill simply, or this amendment simply does that. It deletes out all the language about saying that Big Stone 2 can't be built, whether it's, you believe it says that or not. I believe it does say that. It takes everything out of the bill and reduces it to a study, tells the stakeholders to get together and come up with a plan and a bill that we can live with rather than what we've got here today. So that's pretty much what the amendment does, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Any Representative Rood, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would speak against this amendment. We clearly, it's a great idea that we have a stakeholder process, but we as policymakers were elected, and we were elected by people who spoke pretty loud and clear. And we are asking that their plan that they're going to come up with, we're putting parameters forward for them. So the other thing is this also eliminates some of the anti-backsliding. We are saying, members, that we are asking we are asking stakeholders to come up with a plan to present the legislature in the next year. In the meantime, we don't want to be making the situation worse. So I would oppose this amendment.
Okay. Representative Rood, any further discussion to the A6 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Hackbarth renews his motion to pass the A6 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Next amendment, we have H0375A2. Representative McNamara, if you'd like to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to give Representative Rood the chance. We had some good discussion in the first committee hearing, and I apologize, Representative Rood, I haven't had a chance to talk with you about this, but it's important, folks. What the important part of this amendment is the part crossed out. What this amendment does is it deletes the language, the commission may not issue a certificate of need for the construction of a new nuclear-powered electric generating plant. What it does is it puts back on the table the discussion about the possibility of nuclear power in the future. It only allows a possible discussion. Currently, we can't even consider nuclear power.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Representative Rood.
And thank you, Representative McNamara. I would disagree with you. I would say that this is something that could take place in the stakeholders' process. It does not prohibit that from being part of the discussion. If the stakeholders think that this is an option that we as a state should consider, they can bring that forward. And I would just like to remind members, we had some testimony last week. Mr. Noble spoke to the things that we really need to consider if we want to reopen the possibility of bringing nuclear power here, and that is the cost, the safety, and the storage. So I would oppose this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Rood. Any further discussion to this amendment? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, I thought the way you articulated this issue in committee the other day was actually very compelling in saying that if we are going to reject nuclear in the future as part of the solution, we at least ought to have the data that hasn't been not talked about for 20 years or so. So I found that argument compelling, but I would agree with Representative Rood that the study of looking at nuclear as a potential part of the portfolio to deal with climate change isn't precluded by her bill. So I respectfully would to vote against your amendment, but I would look forward to talking about the issue some more later. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gardner. Any further discussion? With that, no further discussion. So Representative McNamara renews his motion to pass the 8037582 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Amendment is not adopted. Next, I have an amendment that I would like to move. Amendment number 8037587. And that should be coming around. Hopefully everybody's got a copy. The amendment, what this does, it addresses the Section 5, which is the no backsliding provision. What this does is create some flexibility in that section by creating a fund that would be funded through a carbon tax, if you will, that would be imposed on any plants that are going beyond the 2005 levels that do not purchase or find offsets. It does, again, create some flexibility in case the offsets aren't there, in case there's, the carbon credits and so on aren't there to create these offsets. And it does create a fund that would be used for the purposes of developing renewable energy sources and also for carbon sequestration. So that, in a nutshell, is what this does. I would urge your support. Representative Rood, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just am seeing this amendment for the first time a few minutes ago and want to thank you for the intent of this and the spirit. I am going to speak against it, however. I think this is something that we should take a serious look at. This bill does have another stop in the Energy Committee, and you have my word that I will look at this bill, work on this language with you. I do have some questions, and just for today, I would prefer that members not support it.
Any further discussion? Representative Ball.
Mr. Chairman, could you, for those people who are generally supportive of this kind of thing, would you give us a little bit more information? We too have just seen this. How would this not endanger the intent of this bill or the goals of this bill, and maybe provide what it seems as though provide for additional incentives for renewable energy? Could you explain that a little bit further?
Sure. Representative Moe, it creates some flexibility, but it still creates an incentive to stay below the 2005 levels, because if a plant or a company goes beyond that, they will have to pay this carbon tax. And we have not established the price on the carbon tax. I think that would be something that could be established in the Energy Committee. But this it would create the flexibility to expand to some of the growing communities, and I do have some concerns about some of the inflexibility in Section 5 for especially some of the growing communities that have growing energy needs. And this will allow them to continue to expand, but will also provide a fund that will be used for the development of renewable energy and will be used for the development of a carbon market for carbon sequestration. So the incentives are still there. But there's a little more flexibility. Instead of saying, right now we're going to require that you stay below 2005 levels unless you can find offsets, we don't know if those offsets are there yet. So we may be creating a straitjacket for some of our utilities and some of the communities that depend on their energy sources. This will allow, again, for some of the expansion to occur, but we'll still have the incentive there to produce in an efficient way, to try to get the CO2 emissions down below the 2005 level. If they don't, there's going to be a fund that's going to be established for the purposes of creating new renewable sources of energy and developing them and developing carbon sequestration options. So the incentives are still there, but it adds a little flexibility. Representative Mull.
Specific to Section 5, in my understanding, has a pretty high bar for the Big Stone and Excelsior Energy projects in particular. Not that it's unattainable, but it would be relatively difficult. How does this affect that?
Representative Mao, as far as specific projects, I can't really speak to that. Obviously, it does allow for some flexibility, so any particular project could go beyond the 2005 levels without offsets if they pay the carbon tax. And I'm referring to it as a carbon tax. It could be referred to as something else, but I anticipate that it would be a good incentive for them not to go beyond the 2005 levels, but if they do, there's the benefit of funding this this fund, which will be used for renewable energy and carbon sequestration. So regardless of whether they go beyond it or not, there will still be some benefit for the development of renewable energy and for carbon sequestration.
One follow-up question, and Mr. Chairman, you've left that amount of this tax blank.
That is
future correct. Consideration.
That is correct.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, I usually agree with your wise committee leadership. I'm going to oppose this amendment and ask that maybe it be worked on between now and the next committee.
Any further, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Moe has a good idea of working on an amendment like this between now and the next committee. I was taken during our testimony with the testimony from Mike Robertson of the Chamber of Commerce. When the Chamber of Commerce realizes that Minnesota and the world is at a tipping point, then I think we can all join in and say, yes, we are at a tipping point. Minnesota, as a state, has the most, not the most, but of all the states, we have a lot to lose because we have heard the testimony about what will happen to our forests and that we will lose our boreal forests.
Representative Virginia, if you could speak more into the mic, somebody
can
help us hearing.
Minnesota, just because of the way we're situated and because we have ecoregions that are so close together, we have greater opportunities for loss than a lot of other folks do. I think we've all heard that testimony, and parts of that are in our northern forest regions. And when I saw the slides from Dr. Lee Fralick looking at a northern forest that was no longer forests, but grasslands. It scared me. And because of that, and because of the testimony and the understanding that we're at the tipping point, I'm taking to heart the notion that when you're in a hole, you stop digging. And for that reason, I'm going to have to join with Representative Mall. I think the intention here is good, but the outcome could be very bad.
And Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair.
Any other comments? Representative Dill.
Well, could we hear from some of the folks for against an amendment like this? Is that appropriate, or we do that in another committee?
If there is a question,
I only get to serve on this committee when it comes to this bill until it gets to the floor, and so I'm kind of interested in hearing how that lines up with, you know, we've taken a lot of testimony, we've heard from a lot of people, and now you've kind of dropped a whole new idea on top of this, and I have some joys and concerns about this amendment that, you know, cut both ways. So I feel like as my only chance to hear this amendment and this bill, I'd like to hear, you know, from, let's say, the Otter Tail people or the Big Stone people, and then from the other side as well, just even if it's brief, just some ideas on this.
Well, we can do that. And do you have, you mentioned a couple of groups of Otter Tail or
And one other, Mr. Chair, also, you know, this bill, it has a lot far-reaching implications well beyond. If we just ignored Big Stone, if there was no implication at all in Big Stone, that it wasn't even in the picture in this bill, there's also the industry ramifications that, you know, a sequestering carbon to CO2 emissions at other facilities that are likely to come online. I'm thinking, like, for example, in not in my legislative district, but in Representative Sturgis's legislative district, we are at the very cusp and threshold of having the cleanest steelmaking facility in the entire world in Minnesota. But yet, Section 5 is written that appears to me could have a very detrimental effect. We have former Senator Dicklich here that may have information on how that Section 5 might, and then your amendment as well, in charging of tax so that they could go ahead and build. Be interested in hearing some of those arguments and ideas as well. Not even beyond the power implications of this. And economic development, you know, an economic development spin to this.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dale. Representative Root, did you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have somebody, I don't know that he's prepared to speak that broadly, but perhaps he can give us some insight into a similar program that has been used elsewhere.
Thank you. If you could state your name for the record.
Yes,
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kevin Reuther. It's R-E-U-T-H-E-R. I'm an attorney at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And MCEA is also a member of Clean Energy Minnesota. As Representative Rood said, we were just presented with the amendment, so I don't exactly have prepared comments on this type of idea, but it is one of the things that we considered when we were putting the bill together and working with Representative Rood on it. I think that it may be modeled after a program that is in Oregon called the Oregon Climate Trust. And I have spoken with a representative from that trust in discussing these ideas with others in our coalition. And she was concerned about taking this approach. And the main concern that she had was that the benefits that result from the trust do not actually equal the increased carbon emissions that are created when new plants are built. So the way that the program in Oregon works is the total number of emissions over a certain capped level are calculated for a plant, and the owners of the plant then have to pay 85 cents per ton of CO2 emissions over that level into this trust. The trust is then administered to find actual offsets, and they do, I think, a pretty good job of finding real and permanent and what's called additional offsets. So they're offsets that wouldn't otherwise occur. They're reductions in carbon emissions that wouldn't otherwise occur. The problem is that those offsets are much more expensive than 85 cents. She said that they can cost up to about $8 per ton. And so what is being emitted over here is much higher than what's being offset through this program. In fact, they're only offsetting about a tenth of the additional emissions. So in that model, at least, you know, as Representative Wagenius is saying, they're digging their hole much deeper, even though they do have this type of trust fund program. So we do have some concerns about it. I think it does make sense to consider it further, probably, possibly at another committee, but we would not recommend you supporting it at this time, at least.
Thank you. And just in response, I think obviously talking about the Oregon model or what's been used out there doesn't necessarily apply to what I have in this amendment. The amount is not determined in this amendment, and I think that whether or not, you know, the fund offsets, you know, some of the problems with increased emissions, I think that depends in large part on the amount of the carbon tax, and so it certainly could be a very good incentive to reduce emissions while allowing for some flexibility, again, for expanding communities, not developing a straitjacket, if you will, for these utilities and the communities they depend on, but allowing for some growth to occur in a way that's more efficient, and also creating a fund that can be used for the purposes of developing cleaner, homegrown, renewable sources of energy, and also for carbon sequestration. So I don't necessarily think that the comparison with Oregon is necessarily the right comparison to make here. I don't know if there are others who would like to make any comments. Representative Dill had questions for those in the utility industry, if there's anybody that has any comments they would like to make. Mr. Logtag?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lauren Lotzak from Otter Tail Power Company. And while I've not had a chance to think through in detail how this amendment might affect the bill as a whole, just to put this in context, I gave testimony last Thursday concerning the Big Stone 2 plant's carbon emissions and its potential effect on the Chicago Climate Exchange for carbon offsets last year. My testimony suggested that the Chicago Climate Exchange exchanged a total of 10.2 million carbon ton offsets last year. The Big Stone 2 plant's total emissions for carbon are about 4.7 million short tons per year. So Big Stone 2 alone would consume approximately 46% of all of what was traded on the Chicago Climate Exchange last year. I think the average price per ton was around $4, is my understanding. The bill as it's written, its shortcoming from our perspective is that by simply putting an absolute cap on emissions when trading opportunities are limited really creates a scenario where the value of carbon is infinite. And that makes it very difficult rationally to have an economic rationalization of what that cost means with respect to all other potential opportunities that utilities might do, whether it's conservation or renewables or modern coal plants. The blank on line 1.6 makes me a little bit nervous, obviously, but in the context of what's happening in the federal scene, the Bingham draft, Jeff Bingaman is the chair of the Senate Energy Committee, and his draft uses what's called a safety valve price, and the price that's been suggested as a safety valve there is $7 per ton. So utilities would make a decision between offsetting carbon or paying the $7 per ton. I think there's an inflation number built into that too, if I'm not mistaken. My company's not officially endorsed that number or that draft, but I think it certainly has potential for positive discussion with respect to this bill, and it certainly provides flexibility that we don't have in the bill right now. So, and I think Mr. Lancaster might like to make some comments to that as well. I could answer questions.
And Mr. Lancaster, welcome. If you could state your name, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Rick Lancaster, Vice President of Generation with Great River Energy. We're a generation and transmission cooperative that serves 28 distribution co-ops in Minnesota. This amendment is definitely a step in the right direction. It allows us to build plants that are needed for electric reliability. That might be Big Stone. It might be a natural gas-fired peaking plant. We have one under construction now at Cambridge. As I said last week, we'd like to build another one in Elk River on our campus there, that on land that we already own. Those plants are very necessary for electric reliability. They don't have a big carbon footprint. They emit maybe a hundredth of the CO2 that Big Stone would emit. But this amendment at least allows us to build those and allows us to build Big Stone if we so choose, if we feel that we can pay the price for that. So to me, it's a good amendment for the reliability of our electric system in Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Moe had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lochtug, you said that the amount of carbon produced potentially by the Big Stone plant would be almost half of what's currently traded on the Chicago Board of Trade. Did I hear you correctly? Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lochtug, do you know approximately what the dollar value of that is then in trade? I mean, could you give us an estimate even?
Mr. Lochtug?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moe, the number that I'm familiar with on the Chicago Climate Exchange is approximately $4 per ton. So the entire exchange would have been 10.2 million tons times $4.
Okay, so.
So 4.7 million times $4.
So, this is like, Mr. Chairman, we're talking, $25 million perhaps for the Big Stone plant. Is that annual?
Mr. Chair and Representative Moe, that number would be annual, but as I understand the bill, it would apply to all of the tons allocated to users of Big Stone electricity in Minnesota, which is around 50-some percent. So about half of that, Mr. Chair and Representative Moe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moe. Mr. Locke, I appreciate that. I guess it raises the question, if we were to put this amendment on, Mr. Chairman, we would be, if we were accounting for even half of that, we would be wanting to assess a tax or a fee roughly $12, $13 million a year annually just for the Big Stone portion of this, should it be built. I mean, would that be the intent of the author? I mean, that's quite a price tag, and what would that do to the ratepayer cost for power then from that facility?
Well, Representative Moe, obviously the intent is to create the incentive to keep the emissions low and to develop a fund to develop for these purposes of renewable energy. I have not put in, as I said, the amount that would have to be paid per ton, but it would have to be significant enough to create a real disincentive to go beyond the 2005 levels. And I have confidence that we will see an amount emerging in the Energy Committee that would be sufficient to act as a disincentive to go beyond the levels, but would still allow for the flexibility necessary where it's really needed. And yes, I think that it would be significant enough to raise the money necessary to make a substantial investment in renewable energies and in carbon sequestration. So. But that would be determined at a future date. So, Mr. Lancaster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moe, I'm assuming that the tax on Big Stone would be not for the life of the plant, but would be there until the technology is developed that will allow us to capture and sequester the CO2 in a way that meets the language in the bill that's permanent and verifiable and otherwise would not occur and so on. So I wouldn't view this, and I don't believe Mr. Locktog would view this as a permanent tax on the plant for as long as it exists. It's just there until the sequestration, the capture and sequestration of the CO2 can occur, as I interpret it.
Hey, Representative Moe.
I know Representative Gill and Representative Gardner wish to speak. Just one more comment then. I mean, that would be assuming that we would set it at an appropriate price to actually have an incentive for that technology to be developed and implemented, which would be the decision not made by this committee, regrettably.
Okay. And Representative Gill, just before we begin or continue here, there is a provision in here that requires that the utility cannot recover the cost. That's not, okay. There is an option that would allow the utility, that says that the utility will not recover the cost for this tax. So that's an option that can be considered as this bill moves forward, if this amendment is added. So, anyway, Representative Dill, you had a question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lancaster, over at GRE, this sounds like this amendment that the chair has offered might give you a little wiggle room. As we move forward, but I'm thinking about if the amendment isn't adopted and Section 5 remained in the bill, it seems to me that you wouldn't be able to build even a peaking plant. And I guess my question is, do you guys build power plants that aren't needed?
Mr. Lancaster.
I mean, I think that's a... I don't think that... I kind of laughed when I thought of that question myself, but I mean, I just think that you're just talking a peaking plant. They're talking about baseload, and so as we raise the RES, and the wind comes and goes as it does, and you have to build peaking plants that you can't build because of Section 5 in the bill, if the chair's amendment isn't adopted, I just wonder who's going to get browned out first. Who's going to lose power first? Is it going to be the power glutton pigs that continue to expand their communities, or is it going to be the rural people who got one farm light on out in the barnyard? That's kind of a multifaceted
question. Like Representative Bill, please.
Well, believe me, I keep my electric bill as low as possible. When I go downtown St. Paul and I look around and every tree has a Christmas tree string of lights on it, lit up from one end of Kellogg Boulevard to the other, and every light in every building in the state office building and a transportation building is on till 11 o'clock at night, including the lights lighting up the dome of the Capitol, which serves no purpose except if there's a flag flying. I don't think that the people who are consuming electricity are the people out in the rural areas. And members, you know, one of the things that troubles me about this whole thing in the more global perspective of this debate is that, you know, other countries don't have the kind of environmental protections that we're trying to put in place here. And if we push out industry, when I think about at home, when Senator Dinklage is sitting in the audience and he's representing, amongst others, the cusp of steel making in the world, the cleanest possible method of making steel in the world, and we're going to forbid that by this bill, unless it's amended with the author's amendment in some fashion, I mean with the chair's amendment, I don't know how these young folks are going to employ themselves and how we're going to work and how we're going to keep the electric lights on for those who need them. And so my question goes back, do you build power plants that you don't need? And, I mean, that's my question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, no, we do not. We're a consumer-owned cooperative. We only build power plants because our consumer owners need them. We are growing faster than the state average. We add 15,000 new homes a year to our system. We can't serve all those new homes with wind and conservation. We actually need to build power plants. I admit it doesn't have to be Big Stone 2. That's one of the ones we have in mind, though. But we also need to build some gas-fired peaking plants. And we're deficit in 2009 if we can't do that. The statewide deficit occurs later than that, but ours occurs in 2 years. And we'd like to build a gas-fired peaking plant in Elk River that will come online in 2009. But we can't do that under the version of the bill that doesn't have this amendment. If this amendment is on it, then we can do that. If we choose to, we can participate in Big Stone 2. It becomes an economic decision then rather than a prohibition.
Any further? Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a comment on the question of need, and I'm not speaking against the amendment at all, but I think it's important in the context of the bills we're looking at in terms of global warming and energy issues, that the concept of need is relative, and we're trying to redefine a paradigm. And we really are trying to change what need means in our culture and society in terms of the future of the planet. So I don't think that's a very simple question. I think it functions at a lot of levels, and I think we have to reflect pretty in a sophisticated manner and what need is appropriate to what circumstances when we're looking at the future of the planet as a whole.
Representative Reinhart. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're still on the A7 amendment, correct?
Yes, that is
correct. I have two comments specific to that, and I do appreciate you're trying to find solutions here that make things work. I appreciate that. Two questions. One is, or three, I guess, in a timeline here, if this is, I guess I'd be curious to see if this is a temporary measure that would be disbanded once a formalized cap and trade system came online. The second one is, I'm assuming we'd have to make a stop in the tax committee here or some form like that if we went with a carbon tax. The third one relates to interstate commerce. If we're talking about Big Stone 2, which is in South Dakota, we've got, you know, you would assess the tax on the Minnesota customers, or I don't know how that would be allocated. South Dakotans would say, don't spread the risk over me, spread on the Minnesotans. The Minnesotans say, forget it. Industrial users decide to go over to Sioux Falls. I mean, there's some interstate commerce issues that are going through my head here, just as a comment. I don't know if this amendment will go through or get added, but I even if it got rejected and suggested under the next committee, I would just throw that comment out as maybe talk to some folks who thrive on the existence of the Commerce Clause in the U.S. Constitution, if they can interpret what we need to look at there.
Well, Representative Gardner, first of all, the issue of it, whether it's temporary or not, I think that will depend on future legislatures and whether they want this to continue or not. There is nothing in the amendment that there's not a sunset provision in here, so it will continue until the legislature decides otherwise. Obviously, there are provisions in the bill that have the reductions and CO2 emissions as time goes on, and my guess is that eventually this amendment, this provision, if it passes onto the bill, will no longer be necessary as time moves forward. And as far as the tax issue, it's not really referred to as a tax in this amendment. So
carbon user fee.
Yes. So I don't see a need for it to go to the tax committee unless they request it. Of course, that's their prerogative to do so. And as far as the issue of who pays, I think that's not really described here in this amendment. That's something that would have to be determined. I said that there's even an option of saying that ratepayers would not be asked to pay the bill for this. And I know that Mr. Lancaster had made a comment that it wouldn't be considered to be a permanent rate increase if it did get passed on to ratepayers, because I think the companies would be looking for ways to get below that cap, and indeed well below it as the time moves forward and as the reductions start to kick in Representative Rood's bill once we start reaching 2015 and beyond. So I hope I answered your questions on those issues.
I just throw those out for thoughtful consideration. So,
Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. And Representative Dale.
Well, I wonder if, and this is just a thought, if we recessed for 15, 20 minutes and had time to talk about this amongst our respective caucuses, because this did come in here, just at the last few minutes, and we discussed this, Republicans discuss it, we can discuss it, and then we can come back. Because there's really only one other amendment that's before us that I'm aware of, and that is my amendment that would delete Section 5, and I think everybody in the room is prepared to talk for or against that one.
Yes, and Representative Dale, thank you. I was planning on taking a recess on this issue because I think that we do need a little time to discuss it within our caucuses. This is an amendment that I just brought forward and had put together just before the committee, so I didn't have a time to really discuss this, I think, adequately with the members. So I think you bring up a good point. We should recess, and we will recess for, I would say, 10 minutes.
Maybe 20.
And if DFLers could meet in 5:46.
5:46.
Mr. Chairman, the GOP members will meet in 272.
Okay, GOP members meet in 272.
Is that 10 minutes or let's just
make that 20?
Maybe make that a little longer.
Yeah.
Okay. With 20 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, there's none of us that can do this in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Chairman's 19.
20 minutes.
Chairman's buying pizza.
We will reconvene the meeting, and first thing I want to do is I want to offer an oral amendment to my amendment, and it is currently being written, but I can explain what it does in effect. It calls for the task force to include in its study the study of using some kind of carbon penalty, if you will, to create that incentive for reducing emissions and creating this fund for the study of renewable energies and also for carbon sequestration. So it would be implemented in the study phase with the task force. It is not something that would be in Section 5. And it would not be a requirement, but it would be one of the things that the task force will study. And Representative Rood is kind enough to assure me that would be one of the things under discussion. And so I would offer that as an amendment to the amendment. It is currently being drawn up. Is there any discussion before we move on? Once Mr. Eloff has completed, we will have him read the amendment so that everybody can take that down. Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we're on hold, could I clarify one thing with my previous amendment with the author? I'm wondering if I could ask a question.
Sure.
Are we on kind of a holding pattern?
Sure, we are.
Representative Rood, I was looking through I'm assuming you mentioned, and Representative Gardner both mentioned, that you thought in the study that's part of your bill that the nuclear power possibility would be able to be studied. And when I read at the top of page 4, paragraph B, I'm wondering if we wouldn't want to clarify. It seems both you and Representative Gardner want this study to look at the possibility of nuclear power. It seems like it would make sense somewhere like on line 4.5 to add words along the lines of permitting new construction of nuclear power plants, so that we clarify that the study is going to be all-encompassing and include things like that. When I read the paragraph, I get the impression that they might not need to include that.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. I guess at this point in time, I don't see a need to put that in there. I think if that is part of the discussion, that's okay. It's not saying they can't talk about it. I don't feel the need to put it in there explicitly.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rood, I'm assuming you don't want that in there because you don't want the study to look at that possibility then.
You know, Representative McNamara, I would say that's not true. I think the issue of global warming is very serious. And there are people out there who say that we can't get to where we want to go fast enough without considering that. So I would say that that's not the case. I am still holding out for other options at this point, increasing our efficiencies, reducing our waste, looking at renewables. And I do think nuclear power has a huge hurdle for us to go over, cost being probably the biggest one, and safety and storage.
Whenever Mr. Chair is the amendment to the amendment ready, so I should stop talking.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I don't want to present this now because we're on an amendment to the amendment, and that would be out of order. But Representative Rood, I don't have any problem with what you just said. You don't want to consider nuclear power and that we shouldn't have that in the study. I respect that opinion. There's many of our colleagues that feel that way. I just think it's important. If that's your position, that's okay. I just think we should look at that possibility. I'm not advocating for or against it, but I think that we should be clear. If we're going to say that we want it to be or to be allowed in the study, mentioning it in the study seems to make sense to me, and I'll wait till my new amendment will be in order, Mr. Chair.
So, amendment to the amendment is ready. Mr. Eloff, if you could state the amendment to the members.
Page 4, after line 9, insert quote, clause 7. Evaluate the option of exempting a project from the prohibitions contained in Section 5, Subdivision 1 if those projects contribute a specified amount per ton of carbon dioxide emissions emitted annually by the project, the proceeds of which would be used to fund permanent, quantifiable, verifiable, and enforceable reductions in greenhouse gas emissions that would not otherwise have occurred. That uses a lot of language that was in the Eakin Amendment for that.
Thank you, Mr. Eloff. Are there any questions on the amendment? Again, what it does, in effect, is it takes the amendment that I have and places it into the study portion of the bill. So it's just going to be a study of that option. It's not going to be a requirement. So, Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we then working off the delete everything amendment? That's what your amendment was to, so therefore your original amendment is withdrawn?
This is, that
addition
to.
My amendment was drafted to the delete all, correct.
And, Mr. Chair, then what happens to your A7 amendment?
Well, Mr. Eloff, is it possible to amend my amendment so that it's put into a different section of the bill?
Delete all on your amendment and substitute that language that I just read.
Okay. So we would have to withdraw or not?
No, you don't have to withdraw. Okay. Well, except you might need... Question is, can we do that before voting on your amendment? Well, it's an amendment to your amendment, a delete all amendment.
Okay. So this would be an amendment to my amendment, and we will take a vote on it. Yes, Representative Hackbarth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm still not clear. So everything on your A7 amendment
would now be gone,
and we're inserting on your A7 amendment the language that Mr. Eloff has stated.
Exactly. It's a substitution of that language, yes.
It would say delete everything after line two, and insert in the language that I read.
Does everyone understand? Representative Bill?
Let's read that one more time. Sure.
Yes, Mr. Ruoff could read it one more time for the committee.
And I'll now read it to the amendment that's before us. Delete everything after line two and insert, quote, page 4 after line 9, insert clause 7, evaluate the option of exempting a project from the prohibitions contained in section 5, subdivision 1, if the project contributes a specified amount per ton of carbon dioxide emissions emitted annually by the project, the proceeds of which would be used to fund permanent, quantifiable, verifiable, and enforceable reductions in greenhouse gas emissions that would not otherwise have occurred.
Okay. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this oral amendment, the oral changing of your amendment, the A7 amendment would now be to the delete all.
That is correct, Representative Hoppe.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, if I might, where does this bill go from here?
It goes to the Energy Committee is where it would go next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion fails. Amendment to the amendment has been adopted. And now we will take a vote on the amendment as amended.
Oh, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Hackbarth.
I'm going to offer the language that you had in your A7 amendment and put that back in the bill. I would move the language that you have in your A7 amendment.
Well, right now my amendment is still on the table. So, and we are going to be voting on
that. I thought we just voted that on.
We just voted the amendment to the amendment on. So now we have to vote on the amendment
very
as
good.
Amended. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would move your language that was in your A7 amendment.
Representative Hackbarth moves my language from the A7 amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
I'd like a roll call vote.
We will need to refer to it as the A8 amendment to distinguish from the earlier one. So. Okay. And you requested a roll call, Representative Hackbarth.
Correct.
We'll go ahead and take the roll.
Representative Briner?
No.
Representative Cornish?
Yes.
Representative Dill?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Hackbarth?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hoppe?
Yes.
Representative Mariani?
No.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Representative Moe?
No.
Representative Olin?
No.
Representative Osmond?
Yes.
Representative Saylor?
No.
Representative Scalzi?
No.
Representative Tao?
No.
Representative Tinglestad?
Yes.
Representative Guinness?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. The vote is 8 yeses and 10 nays. Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. And moving on, we do have two more amendments. Representative Dill, would you like to move your amendment?
I'd like to move the 375A4.
Representative Dill moves H0375A4 amendment. Representative Dill, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think everybody at the table, at the committee knows what this amendment does. It deletes Section 5. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to go right to either members' questions or testimony. We know where the lay of the land is here. We've all been down the roads before, so we could get the testimony and get a vote on the amendment. We'll see where that ends up.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Questions to the Dill amendment? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to get some clarification, because I know that people have been, and most of the literature that I see around me is focused on the Big Stone 2. I'm really more concerned in the Mesaba facility. And what, with Section 5, the way it is now in the bill, will Mesaba be able to continue, or is it also going to be off the table? And maybe the author would know the answer to that.
Representative Rood.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. The bill simply says if they want to build a plant, then they're going to have to find a way to deal with their carbon emissions. It doesn't prevent them from building a plant. It says that they have to put that new technology in action.
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair and Representative, what it concerns me is that as I'm reading all the documentation from the Department of Energy and others, they're indicating that as they're doing their research, that they're very certain that they're going to be able to come up with some new options, especially with regard to carbon sequestration. The Mesaba plant will be ready for that because it's a gasification facility. I understand the frustration that people are having with Big Stone. I don't care. I don't think that they're really taking a wise look at what is going to be happening long term and where they should really be positioning themselves to be economically as well as environmentally. But the Mesaba facility, to me, is one that is putting in state-of-the-art type of technology, but yet waiting to try and see as to what is going to come out of the federal research to determine as to what type of carbon sequestration should be put in the end. If we force them into a position right now, it could be very costly for them compared to being able to take advantage of the next year or two that you'd have out of the federal research. Is there a reason why we are so adamant that we don't want to go forward with any power plants that we would kind of totally take off the table consideration with regard to the cost and efficiencies of the new technologies that we know is being considered right now by the Department of Energy?
Yes. Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Representative, I would point to that this bill does not prohibit this plant from being built. The Department of Commerce, Xcel Energy, and Minnesota Power, and others have testified to the PUC that Mesaba has failed to meet its legal burden of showing that it's in public interest, or at least at this cost for this resource. If they want to build this plant and make a case for it and offset their emissions, there's nothing that's prohibiting them from doing that.
And Representative Wagenius is next.
Thank you. Representative Osmond suggested that Mesaba will be very costly in the future. It is my understanding that even without carbon sequestration, it's very costly. Would Representative Dill tell us what current status of cassava is and cost per kilowatt hour?
Representative Dill.
Well, the project, as I understand, is currently under working through the permitting process, and the cost is in excess of what is charged presently for electricity from the other generators. I've heard anywhere from a range from 8 to 11 cents, but I can't tell you exactly where that is. In reference to Representative Root's question, Mr. Chair, or statement, Mr. Chair, the other power companies you referenced may have said they haven't met the tests of need, but I may be able to be standard corrected. I think that that's now a matter before an administrative law judge to make that determination. So it's before the judicial branch now, not before other power companies or even the PUC to make that decision. Maybe someone can correct me on that, but I think that's where that's at.
Any further comments or questions?
Well, I have a question. I'm wondering, I have a tendency to think along the lines of Representative Osmond on this, about Big Stone being one case, but then other projects being another set of circumstances that this bill has consequences towards. So I wonder if Mr. Girard could come down and tell us about Minnesota Steel and Iron and how that might affect that project. This bill might affect that project development, and also, although he doesn't, I don't think, represent other projects, you know, there are the other opportunities for building out plants like Nugget beyond the original permitted site that we already have, and how that might affect the industry, if you could make some statement about that. I think, Mr. Girard, don't you represent Minnesota Steel and Iron?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, yes, I do. I also represent Excelsior Energy.
So. You'd be a pretty good guy to have up here in front of us.
Well, I think as you stated earlier, the Minnesota Steel or the Minnesota Steel Plant (MSI) will require a great deal of electric energy, about 450 megawatts. Is the expected use, and that is going to require in some way, shape, or form, and I'm not sure, I can't tell you where it's going to come from, new power coming into the state of Minnesota or new power in the state of Minnesota to be generated. So there is going, that plant, and as I think you stated, the cleanest steel plant in the United States when it's completed, and probably the largest construction project in the state of Minnesota that's ever been done at $1.6 billion, is going to require a good deal of energy. And that energy has to come from somewhere.
And Mr. Girard, if you could state your name for the tape.
Jim Girard, representing Minnesota Steel.
Any further comments or questions at all?
Sure.
Yes, Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this question is to the author. Representative Rood, you said succinctly that this doesn't preclude the state of Minnesota from establishing additional baseload facilities, our power generation. Could you again remind the committee, we will have additional power needs in the state of Minnesota that could be some can be met by conservation, some that perhaps can't. How we might go about actually meeting the power needs of the steel plant or other perhaps industrial needs.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Moe. The utilities have an obligation to serve. They have to figure out how to meet the needs of the people. A couple things I want to say, and hopefully this will answer your question, Representative Moe. This bill, and I know we had somebody speaking about the steel mill, but this bill is talking about the power sector. And what this bill would do, excuse me, would to give Mesaba a reason to build and to use the latest and the greatest technology, because there would be a market for it. It's a market-based system, and that's a good thing. The other thing is, you know, we're not doing any favors to the people out there, the investors, who want to come here and build something with no regard to carbon emissions. We think we're helping them. We want to patch it, and we want to make sure that those projects go forward, and that's okay. You know, it's not okay, because this is a matter of time. The feds are coming down with this. We have the opportunity to put Minnesota in a position of strength and economically and strategically. I don't think it prohibits building new plants if we need them, if they're done right. And we want them done right, because that's going to be our world. It may not be today. We don't think it is. But it's going to be our world. And we're not doing people any favors. We're not doing any favors to the people who think otherwise.
Any other comments or questions? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, my question, I think, is for two folks. I think one, the author, and possibly, I believe, if the Great River are still in the room. Representative Rood, one of the bills that we passed, and I see Representative Peterson up in the corner of the room, was a terrific renewable energy bill that will do a lot for wind generation, specifically down in his district on the Buffalo Ridge. But if I'm not mistaken, along with wind generation, we need a backup power. It's hard to believe, but down in Representative Peterson's district, once in a while it's calm on a summer day when it's 90 degrees. And I believe one of the things we use alongside of that are these peaking plants that tend to use natural gas, which I think are very good for carbon, whatever that word is, sequestration or whatever. But I believe they're good for that, but they're actually very expensive for electricity. Can I ask both you, Representative Rood, and then I would like to ask the Great River folks to weigh in. Is there any potential that we may limit the peaking plants also with this legislation? I just want to make sure that we're going to be able to have, when the wind doesn't blow on the one day in July, electricity through this expensive peaking plant.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara. I believe an earlier testifier made the comment that the gas peaking plants would emit 1/100th of Big Stone. I think I have that right. I don't think building peaking plants will be prohibited if they're necessary. They do not run all the time, and those emissions, I would imagine, could be offset.
Representative McNamara. Could we ask the same question of the Great River folks if they're here? Is there any chance at all that this bill would limit the peaking plants, which I believe we need to construct alongside of the wind?
Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, Rick Lancaster, Vice President of Generation, Great River Energy, Representative McNamara. My concern is, yes, that the bill does prohibit the construction of any power plant that emits CO2 while this cap-and-trade system is being put in place. And I don't know how long that's going to take, but we have a plant under construction right now. We have one that we'd like to build in Elk River that we'd like to start permitting on this summer. And those plants get put on hold as I read this bill. And they are very necessary plants to back up the wind power, to run when the wind's not blowing, and to run when consumer demand for electricity is very high. And it is they do emit on an annual basis about 1/100th of the CO2 that a plant like Big Stone 2 would emit, both because they burn natural gas, which has less carbon in it, but also because they run less often than a baseload plant would. They run about 5 to 10% of the time when they're needed.
Representative Dill.
Well, Ms. Lancaster, I got you up there. How Representative Bugini has brought up the cost up at Mesaba onto the table, the cost per unit. How does a peaking plant, when you build a peaking plant to back up a renewable, how do you work that into the phase in of the amortization of the cost, and what does it do to the cost of electricity overall? When you look at the amortization versus use because you had to build it, because you had renewables, you know, as your base load. You understand that, what I'm getting at?
Well,
Lancaster.
I mean, it seems to me like if, like in the airline industry, you wouldn't buy a 757 and use it once a day or once a week. You'd have the thing flying 10 and 12 hours a day, and then you could afford to buy it. But if you only used it once a week to fly from here to Indianapolis, you'd be about the brokest airline in the country. Not because it costs so much to run, because it costs so much to own. And that's my question.
Mr. Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, good question. Hard for me to answer simply, but I'll give it a shot. The peaking plants, to build one costs about 25% of what a baseload plant would cost on a per kilowatt basis. So they're low cost plants to build. Your airplane analogy was a good one. They're combustion turbines, which is the same technology an aircraft engine is. They don't have a big boiler or a big gasifier in the case of a gasifier plant. So the cost is lower. They do cost more to run because they use natural gas, which is a more expensive fuel than coal. So if you run them for short periods of time, economically, you're ahead of the game. If you have to run them all year round, you'd wish that you'd built a different type of plant. But they're specifically meant to run for short periods to back up wind power and to serve consumer demand when the demands are especially high.
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think when we're looking at this amendment and taking this out, I think that this is a bill that we want to take a look at, but I think we don't want to do anything precipitously, anything that's going to impact development or anything that's going to impact business and make it less attractive for businesses to expand here or move here in Minnesota. I would not only urge members to support this bill, but Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call on this vote, please.
Roll call is requested. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also had a question for the Representative Great River, so perhaps you make the stroll back to the table there. Thank you. And a comment to the author, maybe she could respond, and then the gentleman from Great River. Representative Root, we have a cap with Section 5 requires a cap and trade system be developed in the state of Minnesota. And I wondered if you could you've probably said this before while I was up in another committee, but maybe you could remind the committee, you know, the process, how long that might take. And then my next question would be for Great River. You know, you've got plants now in Minnesota that baseload plants that are produced in the 50s that are still in operation. I would estimate that if you're building facilities, they're going to be in, you're going to build them to serve Minnesotans for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Why on earth would you want to build one before this system's in place? It just doesn't seem to make any long-term financial sense for you to, if you got things in the works now for next year, the year after. I mean, we're not talking that much time in the span of your business operation. It doesn't seem to make very good financial sense for you to be, you know, that impatient. Maybe waiting until this cap and trade system's in place, it would just make more sense. So maybe Representative Root, if you'd comment first, please.
Representative Root.
How long? Thank you, Mr. Representative Moe. The question to me, I think, was how long would it take to develop a cap and trade program? I can't speak with absolute certainty, but I would suspect a couple of years is what I've been told.
Seems like a reasonable time to wait.
And Mr. Lancaster?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moe, we have a sense of urgency because of our overriding mission to provide reliable electricity to our consumers. And we're very focused on that, and we got to do that first and figure out the other stuff later. And I don't think people... No, I don't know how close we were, but on February 5th, according to what I read in the newspapers and heard from my colleagues, we had 600 megawatts of capacity available on a 15,000 megawatt system. 600 megawatts is one power plant. We had a power plant in southern Minnesota that was trying to run on fuel oil that day, and the fuel oil had turned to jello because it was It was 15 degrees below zero, and the heater had been designed by a German company and wasn't good enough. So we need to have some power plants that are available to run in order to keep the lights on, and other problems we need to figure out later. But our primary goal is to keep the lights on.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Lancaster, I appreciate your frank response. We have an urgency, too. I mean, frankly, you know, I think everybody knows here, just about everybody, we're cooking the earth. And it's a pretty dramatic problem. And I can't imagine a more urgent need for the legislature. Now, granted, you're serving your customers. We appreciate that. I've been one in years past. And but this is a pretty dramatic issue. So I understand your concern for your customers. But, you know, granted, we had a little bit of cold this winter, but we didn't have a winter until the end of February. And it's been not since 1996 since we'd had a real winter up north. The district I represent is an outdoor recreation-based economy. We're feeling the economic impacts now. So I appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moe, I just, maybe I'm an optimist. I think there's a way to do both. I think there's a way to solve the global warming problem and keep the lights on at the same time.
Hear, hear.
Representative McNamara, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lancaster, I just want to follow up. We've got a lot of good energy conservation and things happening, but I understand our energy needs are growing at almost 2% a year. Would that be true? It's in somewhere in that range? And if you could tell me what your thoughts are.
Mr. Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, 2% is a statewide average. At Great River Energy, we're growing faster than average. We serve outer suburbs of the Twin Cities, as well as new ethanol plants and new lake homes that are being built in northern Minnesota, and our growth rate is 3 to 4% per year.
And one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. You said that we had about 600 megawatts of 15,000, I believe, were the numbers that you gave. And I just did a quick computation, and that was 4%. So if I'm right on that, Representative Root said that she thought in 2 years we might have cap and trade. And if I was just to use your numbers of this, as Representative Moe said, this was a relatively mild winter. If we were to have a more average winter or a little more cold, that in 2 years we're going to be out of the excess storage, and assuming all the plants are working and we don't have a fuel oil gel up or something. Hard to believe in Minnesota that we could have that happen. We will be out of electricity. Am I understanding that right? And we won't have any baseload capacity left in 2 years if we grow at 4% and we have a day similar to the day you mentioned in February.
Mr. Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the average for the state at which we will be out of capacity is 2011. For GRE, it's faster than that. We're out of capacity in 2009, and we need to build a peaker in Elk River to meet that. But your math is correct. The 600 megawatts that came from a newspaper report, 600 megawatts out of 15,000. The industry as a whole would like to have a 15% reserve margin, and that day it was down to 4, which is one power plant. And that's not enough. There's complex mechanical systems there, as well as fuel problems that can occur, and we need to have more margin than that.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one of the other things this committee needs to consider, if the state demographer is right and we're expecting 1 million new people in the metro area, roughly a 25% increase by 2020, I'm not an engineer and I don't know what's right, but I think we need to consider where we're going to get the power, the energy for all these people that are coming. I mean, if that's true, that's something else we need to start thinking about right now, because you can't just get plants up and running overnight.
Any other comments? Representative Rood.
Can I just say something quickly?
Sure.
Thank you. I want to repeat that this is not a prohibition on new construction. It is an incentive to modernize. And Representative Hoppe, your comments and also about the growth, you know, we can't go on with business as usual. and we have the opportunity this session. Representative Kalin will be has introduced legislation to reduce waste and increase efficiency. Representative Peterson, we passed that bill earlier. I think that was fantastic. So we have to really, we're not going to be able to do this with just one little piece. It's going to be a combination of factors that all come together.
Well, sounds like we're coming to the end of this discussion. First off, Representative Vaginius had brought up Masaba and the cost. A lobbyist that represents them sent me down a note and said that they're at about 6.3 cents a kilowatt, but that's at a cost because there's federal loan guarantees and things that buy the cost down. So that's what those folks that represent that project are. I wanted to get that on the record. And lastly, I think before we vote on the amendment, unless someone else wants to speak on it, my biggest troublesome part of this is that it reaches out and affects what I perceive as being the possibility for economic development to occur before the cap and trade program is implemented. If, you know, I sense from the industry folks, you know, there's a real balance. The industry folks don't build, you heard from Mr. Lancaster, they don't build plants they don't need. That's foolish waste of their shareholders or their cooperative members. Industries don't build plants that there isn't a demand for their products. And if the cap and trade program were in place, then those industries would partake in the cap and trade program. They'd purchase the credits that they need, and they go on about their business. But what we don't have is that in place, and that's not going to be in place for a couple of years. And I can tell you that in an area where there is nothing, my entire legislative district, and I suspect that Representative Moe would say his as well, is declining enrollment because we have a lack of economic opportunity, a decreasing amount of economic opportunity, and that's very synonymous across the state. And then you it was particularly in rural areas, and then you match that up with the rising cost of electricity because of actions that this legislature might take. And I see us sending jobs to countries that are not, they have no intention of implementing the kind of environmental controls that each and every person, regardless of whether you agree with Section 5 or not, want to see at the end of the day, at the end of the year, at the end of the month, or whatever time frame we're going to frame. And that is what I see as the significance of this amendment. And I am absolutely for deleting the Section 5 and then coming back with some further negotiations, whether they be along the lines of the amendment that that our chairman here introduced, or some other facilitation or exemptions to industries that might be on the cusp of doing something good economically and environmentally. But right now, the way the bill stands, we can't get there the way the bill is framed. And so that's kind of my closing thought on this thing, on the amendment that's before us, the 357A4 amendment. If the cap and trade program was here, it was done, and we knew what we were, it was quantified, these companies would be exercising their ability to participate in that program, and we'd be not talking about Section 5. But in that time period, we're going to suffer.
And I believe Representative Osmond was first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dale, I agree with you because I have, I'm supporting the cap and trade provisions. I think that they were, I know that there was, it was controversial piece that was in here. I'll buck that opposition because I really think it's the right direction to go in. I think we need to get some controls. I'm very concerned about what's happening around us, and I think we need to be taking some proactive activities in place, get some provisions put in place. But what I'm really concerned about is knee-jerking our way into this thing, to where just Mr. Lancaster, if you could, you mentioned that there's a peaking plant that's under construction right now. And how many construction jobs are we talking about here with that could be at jeopardy right now, and plus the ones that you said were in the planning process that you were going to be going forward with in the next year or two.
Mr. Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osment, the peaking plants take about a they take about a year to permit and about a year to build, and it's around 80 to 100 construction jobs, skilled labor that builds them, and it takes for a 150 megawatt plant about three to operate it.
The members of the construction trade friends have contacted me and asked me to be very concerned about what we're doing and how it will impact on their futures. And I think I want to do all these things. I want us to go in this direction. But why we all of a sudden have to start putting people out of work and turn around on a dime, I don't understand that. Because if we were going to resolve this just within Minnesota, I would have a different attitude. But Representative Moe, this isn't just Minnesota, and we're a little tiny blip. And why we have to take such risk in order to try and do the right thing is when I believe there are other logical and reasonable ways to approach this where we can outline ourselves in a little more timely fashion. I don't understand why the committee has rejected that. I really like the approach that the chair, and I commend you for your leadership on that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Because I think that it was it's a good concept. It gave us a little bit of latitude in order to keep things going, but yet letting people know if you go down this road, it's going to cost you. And yet it didn't give an absolute to where we essentially have to stop construction in its path. I don't understand why we're doing that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Bill.
To that point.
Okay, Representative Bill.
Well, Representative Osment brought up the jobs about this thing. And we're talking about, in one of these projects, is the largest industrial project in the history of the state of Minnesota. We're talking about thousands of jobs, not hundreds, thousands, over a course of quite a number of years. We're talking about building a taconite mining facility, which hasn't been done in years. Talking about building a taconite plant, a direct reduced iron facility, and then a electric arc furnace all on one site. We're talking about Mesaba Energy, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of jobs potentially to build that. And so we're not talking hundreds here. We're talking thousands of people that are earning living wage jobs that in this two-year period or however long it takes to get the cap and trade up and running that could be sacrificed for at least that period of time and maybe even longer, because I have to tell you that if the steel market turns another direction than it is now, that Mesaba Steel and Iron might not even happen. One of the reasons it's happening is because the price of commodities are so high. So I think that's really an important thing to think about our friends in labor who have come to us on this particular section. Thank you, Representative Osment.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Moe.
Also that point, thank you, Representative Osment, for your point. Minnesota isn't an island, however. And I think you and your chairmanship before have recognized this point, that Minnesota has shown leadership on other key environmental initiatives. We are not getting federal leadership on this. We need to pass this as a state. Other states are following suit, and that's how we're going to get a national plan, and that's how the rest of the world is going to follow. So I really appreciate the author's work on this. Minnesota, we are environmental leaders, and this will go down as an environmental year for the state of Minnesota.
Representative Tinkelstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a procedural question. We're on the A4 amendment right now, right?
That is correct.
And I'm understanding the discussion about deleting Section 5. I'm wondering if that also includes page 6, lines 1 through 24.
Yes, that would. So, any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, does that need to be added in specifically on the A4?
Mr. Ulock?
No, second. I understand your concern, but the instruction on the amendment includes all of Section 5.
Be clear. Thank you.
And Representative Hansen, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Representative Rood. This bill has multiple steps that it's going through, and we're hearing concerns raised on a variety of issues. Are you willing to continue working with all the various stakeholders to try to address those concerns as they go through the process, that this isn't the end, this is the beginning? I just want to hear directly, you are not trying to hold everything clean here. You are willing to work with folks as this process moves through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hanson. Absolutely. I am committed to working on legislation that will be effective and functional, and that is going to be substantive. So you have my word on that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Bill.
Well, could you read the, not on my amendment, but the motion that this bill was introduced under? Could you read that motion?
Motion?
And how the bill was introduced?
The motion was that it be re-referred to the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy. The delete all amendment.
Delete all, but not recommended to pass?
It is recommended to pass, yes.
Well, that's where Representative Hanson and I differ on this, because I think when we say it's recommended to pass, that we're, if Section 5 isn't deleted, that we've sent a message that, you know, we're not, there's not peace in the, there, you know, we haven't done that negotiation. And I, in my negotiation, every time I negotiate from the back seat, I usually end up there last. And so I'm interested in getting the thing amended and getting Section 5 out and then recommended to pass, and then the author can work to get some of the provisions that are near and dear to her heart back into it, which, you know, I'm all right with. I think the spirit of this legislation is, I think Representative Osmond and I both said we're in favor of the spirit of this, but we've taken a, kind of a snapshot at it that I'm unsettled about.
Representative Olin.
I think I'm in agreement with Mr. Representative Dill when he says that if we're recommending it to pass, as long as we have Section 5 sitting in there, I don't want anything to do with this bill. If we're just recommending it, send it to a different committee. That's a different thing.
Any other comments on the amendment? Seeing none, there has been a roll call, and I will renew the motion for Representative Dill. If you want to renew the motion?
Yes, I'd renew the motion and recommend it to pass, by the way. The April
amendment.
Well, I'm in the back seat, so I'm able to say that. You know, turn right or turn left.
Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Breinert.
No.
Representative Cornish.
Yep.
Representative Dill.
Yep.
Representative Gardner.
No.
Representative Hackler.
Yes.
Representative Hanson.
No.
Representative Hoppe.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Moe.
No.
Representative Odom?
Yes.
Representative Osmond?
Yes.
Representative Saylor?
No.
Representative Scalzi?
No.
Representative Tao?
Pass.
Representative Tinglestad?
No.
Representative Rodinez?
No.
Chairman Eakin?
Yes.
Representative Tao?
Yeah.
The vote being 9 yes and 9 no, the motion fails, does not prevail, amendment is not adopted. We do have one more amendment, Representative Dill.
I'm not going to go forward with that one.
Representative Dill withdraws the amendment. We are now on the final passage of...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative McNamara.
I believe your staff has my amended amendment, if I'm not mistaken.
We do have the amendment that's coming around, and Representative McNamara, you want to speak to your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I just want to reiterate, this is the amendment I talked about while we are on the amendment to amendment, so it would have been out of order at that time. It goes along the spirit of my conversation with the author, Representative Root and Representative Gardner, that we should be able to look at the nuclear power plants, and I would stand for questions from any of the members.
Any questions at all? Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative McNamara. I do want to point out that the stakeholders group will be facilitated by the Center for Climate Strategies, and they will consider all options. They consider 300 different options when they're looking at their plans. So it will already be included. I don't think we need to put it in there explicitly. And they will also have to consider the cost, the safety, and the storage. So I would be opposed to this amendment.
Any further discussion to Representative McNamara's amendment? Representative McNamara.
Just to clarify to the author, you're opposed to my amendment, even though you support that it will be included, but you don't want to qualify that it will be included.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative McNamara. I am opposed to it. I think what will happen is if the stakeholders group brings forward, if the commissioner brings forward a plan and says we as a state need to consider this, then that's the debate we have next year. This is not going to prevent that debate from occurring. If they say we need to consider it, then we will have that issue will be fully debated here at the legislature.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, Representative McNamara removes this motion that Amendment H0375A9 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Division has been called. All those in favor signify by raising their hands. All those opposed? The vote being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion to delete all amendment? The bill as amended. Representative Rood, did you have any final comments?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have heard that global warming presents us with challenges and opportunities. We as policymakers must consider not just the environmental implications of global warming, but also the economic, social justice, and moral implications. The youth that presented here last week made a pretty strong case, and I would just like to read one or two sentences from the testimony that we heard from Michelle Hefterberg. She said, and I quote, "I will be 61 years old in the year 2050. It is my generation that will be living under the policies that you create and the environmental improvements they'll bring. It is my children that will be growing up under these policies. Please particularly consider the interests of my generation in whatever plan you come up with," end quote. The people of Minnesota have already turned the corner on this issue, and they are looking to us for leadership. It is irresponsible of us to set forth energy policy and not consider global warming. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rood. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, Representative Rood, I will renew my motion that House File 375, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dill.
I'd like to amend your motion. No recommendation.
Representative Dill moves that there be no recommendation, and we will take a vote on that first. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 375, as amended, be not be recommended to pass.
No recommendation. In other words, we're passing it on without recommendation.
Right. Without recommendation, be re-referred to the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy. We do have Representative Mariani.
Just a clarification point. If I assume that motion does not prevail, the original motion would be in order.
That is correct, Representative Mariani.
Thank you.
Again, the motion is to not recommend, no recommendation be referred to the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment.
I think I got it. Considering the 9-9 vote, we better take a division on that one.
Okay, we will take a division. All those in favor signify by raising your hands. All those opposed? The vote being 7 yeses and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The motion is not adopted. I will again renew the motion that House File 375, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed and recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy. With that, we will adjourn until this Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.